Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Let's get to the docket. October 22nd, 2021. First, there's a closed hearing that took place in the Lori Vallow matter. Second, a final few words regarding the Brian Laundrie matter. Alec Baldwin, is that an accident? An update on the Alex Murdoch matter. I love this former Marine. Another teacher gone wild. Apparently, one way to celebrate your one-year wedding anniversary. And then finally, a recap of our dumb criminal contestants throughout the week and a new contestant for today. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. The channel where you actually have a practicing criminal defense attorney explain the facts, the procedure, and the law, not only to cold cases, but to current actual criminal cases. Thanks for watching. Now, if you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button, hit the thumbs up, hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live. And as always, leave me a comment below about what we talk about here today. And don't forget, you can listen to not only this show, but previous shows by downloading Crime Talk on all of your favorite podcasting apps like Apple, Spotify, iHeart, Android, Amazon, Audible, you name it, we're there. Crime Talk with Scott Reich. All right, before we start the docket, let's support our sponsor of today's program. Please go to the link, crimetalkprep.com, and claim your three-month emergency food kit. Now, in today's world of supply chain shortages, you just don't know exactly what's going to take place. And I pulled an article just the other day from Bloomberg, and here it is. In the Denver Public School, children are facing shortages of milk. Chicago local market is running short on canned good and boxed items. Bottom line is, supply chain issues are coming to a grocery store near you. You need to do the responsible thing. Make sure you have an emergency food supply just in case. Now, whether you go and stock up or you go to crimetalkprep.com and get that emergency food kit, either way, be responsible. You need to take care of yourself. At the end of the day, the cavalry isn't coming, all right? Go to crimetalkprep.com. You'll be happy you did. Now to the docket. First, there has been a closed hearing regarding Lori Vallow today. Yep, and that's all we can tell you about it. Why? Because, well, it was a closed hearing. No one was permitted, and all of the orders have been completely redacted. Now, you know how I hate to speculate, but I think I am not speculating too far or stretching anything too far when I say that it was probably regarding the status regarding restoration of Lori Vallow. And not to speculate, but having done cases where there have been issues regarding restoration, now seems about the appropriate time where there are going to be requests to either continue or ask that the medications to hopefully restore her to competency would be ordered to take place. Now, I'm telling you, I'm being completely honest with you, I don't know if that's actually the purpose of that hearing today. It could have been a simple scheduling hearing. I don't know. But it would make sense that it had to do with Lori Vallow and her competency and restoration. I'm speaking from experience on other matters, given the length of time when she was originally found not to be competent and the restoration matters have been continued. But take it with a grain of salt, and I'm telling you that up front because, frankly, we just don't know. Okay, a final word on the Brian Laundrie matter because, frankly, I don't think there's much more to be said, right? Other than the authorities announced late yesterday, Thursday, that the Laundrie's dental records were a match for the badly decomposed partial skull found in an area of the Carlton Reserve that had recently been underwater. Now, on Wednesday, Laundrie's parents reportedly found an item or items that belonged to their son near the reserve, but it is not yet known if either of those items were a backpack or a notebook that investigators said that had been discovered with the remains. Now, it is unclear if investigators discovered any remains beyond the partial human skull. It's been reported that police officers went to the Laundrie family home in Northport on Friday, but stayed for only about 2 minutes. The attorney representing the family of Brian Laundrie said the medical examiner made a determination about Laundrie's cause of death as early as midday Friday. In a statement, attorney Bertolino says, "I was informed from law enforcement yesterday that perhaps midday today we may have some more information. But as of right now, we know as much as you do." Now, the Laundrie family attorney has also said Brian Laundrie was extremely upset when he left the family home about a month ago. He said that his father, Chris, tried to stop him, but obviously was unsuccessful. When the attorney was asked if Chris and Roberta Laundrie were going to reach out to the Petito family to offer their condolences, Bertolino said that certain conversations must happen before there is communication between the two families. Bertolino hinted that he will need to reach out to the Petito family's attorney first, possibly because Bertolino is worried about a wrongful death lawsuit. Another concern would be whether the Laundries had anything to do with Brian's escape. Well, let's just wrap this up, ladies and gentlemen. Brian Laundrie is deceased, and I believe there's pretty strong evidence, and most people believe that he's responsible for the death of Gabby Petito. He left the house, and he's now deceased. A little bit ironic, maybe a little karma for sure, that Gabby Petito was left, her remains were left out in the woods for the weather and animals to do what they wanted with her remains. And apparently, sitting in the water in the hot swamps of Florida, what they believed to be Brian Laundrie's remains were also badly decomposed. But the matter is over. It's a tragedy on all sides. Certainly, Gabby Petito had a bright future ahead of her. If Brian Laundrie had been charged and apprehended, he probably would have been spending the remainder of his natural life in prison. But I think you have to remember is that regardless of what people have done, they still had families that love them. And it's a difficult time for people. I've had several clients over the years harm themselves when cases were pending. And I even had one that harmed himself during a police standoff after they called me to the scene. And after talking with me and a little while later, let's just say things ended unpleasantly. And it's a reality of life. It's unfortunate circumstances, but those people still had families. So really, our heart goes out to everybody in this particular case. There are no winners. There are only losers. The Laundrie family can hopefully go back to some sort of semblance of normalcy, if there's ever going to be that again. And they shouldn't have to worry about any sort of wrongful death case against the family. They did not do anything to Gabby Petito. It would appear the person responsible for that, well, he's now dead. Well, I'm sure everybody's heard about old Alec Baldwin. Yep. A woman died on the set of Alec Baldwin's upcoming film after the actor reportedly fired a prop gun on the set of his upcoming film. The film's director was also injured. 42-year-old Helena Hutchins, the director of photography for the upcoming film Rust, died after Baldwin reportedly discharged a prop gun while the film was shooting in New Mexico. The film's director, 48-year-old Joel Souza, was also injured and received emergency medical care at the Christus St. Vincent Regional Medical Center there in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Now, Hutchins died at the University of New Mexico Hospital in Albuquerque following what appeared to be an accident. Now, Baldwin is believed to have fired a single round from a prop gun that somehow struck both Hutchins and Souza. Witnesses said the single bullet struck Hutchins in the body and pierced Souza's clavicle. Authorities have released limited details thus far about the tragedy, and the incident remains under investigation. According to a sheriff's office news release, authorities are still working to determine what type of projectile was discharged. Now, Alec Baldwin said on Friday that his heart is broken after accidentally shooting and killing the female cinematographer that he was cooperating fully with the police and was in touch with the woman's grieving husband. Now, Baldwin was taken to the sheriff's department to be questioned. He was released without any charges after giving a tearful interview. Afterwards, the 63-year-old actor was photographed doubled over in shock and grief as he spoke on the phone. Now, Baldwin is the lead actor in the film and its producer, and he's also shared a bit of the writing credits. The movie's armorer has not yet been named. Now, it's common on movie sets, apparently, for actors to use real guns loaded with blanks or dummy bullets to give a more lifelike effect in the shooting. Now, Baldwin was stunned after firing the fatal round and asked, "Why was I handed a hot gun?" But it remains unclear how a blank could have killed Hutchins or how a live round accidentally ended up in the gun's chamber when Baldwin pulled the trigger. The tragedy is reminiscent of the 1993 accident on the set of The Crow when Bruce Lee's son Brandon was shot and killed by a fellow actor. The film crew in that accident thought the gun was loaded with dummy bullets and blanks, but an autopsy revealed that Lee had a .44 caliber bullet lodged in his spine. Investigators in that shooting also probed the theory that a dummy cartridge got stuck in the barrel before the second was fired, a known hazard in shooting which can cause serious injuries or death when the second round is fired. Well, this case opens up a lot of questions and issues, does it not? First, how did this firearm get loaded? If it was loaded, was it a blank? What projectile was expelled from that? Did he pull the trigger, he being Alec Baldwin? And if he did, how was it that the director, where were they standing? Why was he pulling the trigger? Was it part of the scene? No one seems to ask that question just yet. Was he goofing around? I don't know. What about all those, you know, rules of always treat every firearm as loaded, never point it at anyone unless you intend to shoot, always keep your finger off the trigger until you intend to fire, and always, you know, look beyond the target to make sure you don't hit anybody. Yeah, I can memorize, I have those memorized. And having done a negligent discharge case just recently where the firearm, in my opinion, completely negligently discharged, there's no doubt about it. But there are people that will prosecute, I assure you, and say that Mr. Alec Baldwin could possibly be charged at a minimum with criminally negligent homicide because he was negligent in the handling of that firearm and should have treated it as loaded. Just saying, and if the law is going to be equal, you have to really wonder. It's not, negligence is not a mental state that he intended to do something, only that, well, he fired the gun and he negligently handled it, or somebody did. Somebody's going to have to be held responsible. I'd be surprised if charges were not filed in this particular case. And Mr. Baldwin, I'm not saying you did anything wrong, but you may want to get yourself an attorney. Next on the docket, another Alex. Well, Alex Murdoch. The South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, also known as SLED, has released 911 calls of Alex Murdoch, and a passerby reported that Murdoch had blood all over him as he waved for help after his alleged shooting in Hampton County. Now, Murdoch told a dispatcher he was shot by an unknown man while stopped with a flat tire in rural Salcahatchie Road in Hampton, South Carolina. Now, the new 911 calls include one made by Murdoch reporting that he was shot, another by a woman who happened to drive by, and a third by Murdoch when he was on his way to the hospital. Now, Murdoch told a dispatcher he was shot by a white fella while on the side of the road. I got a flat tire and I stopped and somebody stopped to help me. And when I turned my back, they tried to shoot me. He said he called 911. Asked where he was shot, Murdoch said he wasn't sure, but somewhere on my head. The whole audio is uploaded here on Crime Talk, and you can check it out. Probably put a link in as well. You be the judge. Well, we already know it's fake, but he's not a very good actor in my humble opinion. But let me know. Clearly, the man thinks he can get away with just about anything. Now, in another call released, a woman described what she saw, and there is a man on the side of the road with blood all over him. He's waving his hand. He looks fine, the woman told the dispatcher. But it kind of looks like a setup, so we didn't stop. A man with a woman described Murdoch at the scene. He said Murdoch's SUV was pulled over on the side of the road. There's no damage to the SUV. He's got this caution's light on, and the man said the trunk of the car was open. In the third call, Murdoch called 911 back after losing connection with the previous operator, and he told the operator that a young lady was driving him to the hospital in a white Nissan Rogue. Well, the hits just keep coming for Mr. Alex Murdoch. He also still remains in custody, awaiting charges on that whole theft. That's right. Now, this is what I love. I love this former Marine. I'm sure a lot of people have already seen the video of a Marine Corps veteran. He's being credited for stopping a robbery Wednesday after three people tried to hold up a Chevron gas station in Arizona near I-8 and Fortuna Road in Yuma on Wednesday. At about 4:30 a.m., three suspects dressed in black walked into the store. When one of the suspects pulled out a gun and aimed it at the store cashier, the Marine took action. The two other suspects fled the store while the Marine detained the suspect with the gun until police arrived to take over. The Yuma County Sheriff's Department released security footage of the incident. Now, the suspect detained during the incident was a juvenile and was booked into the Yuma County Juvenile Justice Center for one count of armed robbery and one count of aggravated assault. The Sheriff's Department said on Facebook, the other two suspects are currently outstanding. The juvenile suspect was arrested and charged, like I said, with armed robbery and aggravated assault. Now, this former Marine's name was James Kilser. I love his attitude. He was just simply trying to basically stop these punks, got the gun pointed in a direction, and then went at him. I love it. I saw an interview of him this morning on TV, and James said that he didn't really recall beating the kid, but apparently he had some Gatorade and an energy drink in his bag that came around and used that to detain the young juvenile, the young ute that was trying to rob the grocery store or the convenience store. So one word to James, or two, I guess, Semper Fi. All right, next on the docket, another school teacher gone wild. Abraham Christopher Smith, a former high school teacher in Iowa, is headed to federal prison after pleading guilty to sexually exploiting a child. According to documents, Smith was a teacher at the Southeast Polk High School when he knowingly persuaded, induced, and enticed a 15-year-old student at the school to engage in sexual activity with him. The encounter occurred on at least two separate dates, dating back to October of 2020. Smith recorded at least one of the encounters on his iPhone, according to investigators. They found the video stored in a private photo vault application that contained multiple sexually provocative images of the victim along with text messages. Now, Smith, 39, was sentenced to 24 years in federal prison. The United States Attorney's Office for the Southern District of Iowa said in a press release, Smith had pled guilty in June to enticement of a minor. As part of the plea, three additional federal charges were dismissed. The enticement of a minor charge carried a mandatory minimum sentence of 10 years in prison and up to life. Now, after serving his sentence, Smith will be released on supervised release for no less than 10 years. He will also have to register as a sex offender. Iowa state court records show that Smith was also charged with multiple state crimes, including sexual abuse, sexual exploitation of a minor, and sexual exploitation by a school employee. The state charges were dismissed in December when Smith was indicted on the federal charge. School officials declined to comment on the sentencing. Now, quick note here, ladies and gentlemen, to all the teachers out there. Most teachers, great people, okay? They really are. But do you really think that that juvenile that you think you want to have relationships with is worth going to prison for 24 years? No, nobody is, okay? But that's what you're going to get when you do things with kids. It's wrong and you don't do it and you can't take advantage of your position of authority and trust as a teacher to make that happen. Mr. Smith, well, he's going to prison for 24 years. All right, next on the docket, This is one way to celebrate your one-year wedding anniversary, is it not? A 41-year-old New Hampshire man reportedly admitted to killing and dismembering his wife in their van as they went out of town to celebrate their first wedding anniversary. Apparently, it wasn't that great of a year. Well, Emily Ferlazzo's family members reported her missing at approximately 7:15 p.m. on October 18th. Emily and her husband, Joseph, traveled to Bolton, Vermont together. On October 16th, Emily reportedly got out of the car she and Joseph were using and began walking on the road. According to the statement, Joseph said he was at a store when she got out of the car. When he came back to the vehicle, he couldn't find her. Another missing spouse. Joseph reportedly told Emily's family in New Hampshire that before she got out of the car, the two had gotten into an argument while driving down Bolton Valley Access Road. Well, the Vermont State Police called her disappearance suspicious and said their dog, Remington, had also gone missing. I'm not even going to go there. You mess with the dog, that's it. Authorities hoped to speak to Joseph, but said that on their October 19 statement that they had been unable to locate him. Well, he was ultimately found hours later at a convenience store and agreed to speak with the state troopers. Their dog was found unharmed, thank goodness. Now, on October 19th, the Vermont State Police announced they found human remains that they believed were those of Emily. And according to the police, Joseph admitted to killing Emily inside their car. Their vehicle was a bus that they had converted into a living and traveling space, and the autopsy positively identified the body as Emily. Her death was ruled a homicide, with the cause of death being a gunshot wound to the head. Joseph was arrested and charged with first-degree murder and has pled not guilty in court. Joseph's statement goes on where he states that the two of them had got into an argument. When they had got into the van, it got physical. She reportedly kicked and punched Joseph during the fight, but he decided to jump on top of her and then shot her in the back of the head. Joseph allegedly met his sister and her boyfriend for breakfast the next morning, then drove the van with Emily's body in it to a friend's house. Joseph reportedly admitted to that friend he killed Emily. The friend then called police. Joseph allegedly dismembered his wife's body with a handsaw somewhere between 12 to 15 hours after shooting her and put the body parts in trash bags. Investigators discovered 8 trash bags in the van's bathroom. It's anticipated that more charges could come in the future, but that's all there is right now, the first degree murder. Wow. You think you know somebody, you think you love them, and then next thing you know, you're dead and being chopped up in a van. Wow. Be careful out there, ladies and gentlemen. We talked about the other day all the bodies that have been found while they've been searching for these high-profile cases. And these are the ones where people actually get reported missing, where their family members are concerned. Think of all the people that have no one or nobody knows where they are, and they just go away missing. Scary world out there, ladies and gentlemen. Be careful. Be careful. All right. Dumb criminal contestant of the week. Quickly recap. Monday, a Lexington, South Carolina school teacher, Victoria Farish Weiss, 27, is charged with possession of marijuana after receiving word that, well, students picked a pack of marijuana edibles out of a box full of candy that she used as rewards for the students. Trouble there. Tuesday, investigators say Terry Majors, 30, called 911 after seeking medical assistance once he was inside the Sunstar ambulance. Majors allegedly removed his clothes and began pleasuring himself. Wednesday, Florida man Edward William Rodriguez, 28, was arrested after an incident at a Waffle House in which he stated he was high and drunk, used his finger in the shape of a gun to steal napkins. That's right, napkins from Waffle House with a simulated weapon, his finger. That's dumb. Thursday, Florida man Jordan Thomas appeared for an arraignment on battery charges and was arrested in court after striking the victim after he threw the letter G from a sign on one of the boards in the courtroom. And today's contestant, yes, coming from Jefferson City, Missouri, Lacey Youth. Well, she was charged with sexual misconduct involving a child under 15 last Wednesday when she allegedly went streaking naked across a football field of eighth graders. Youth allegedly jumped over the football stadium fence wearing only a scarf. And youth also told prosecutors she took heroin before leaving her home in the nude to look for help because she felt like she was going to die. Youth was reportedly taken to the hospital and later posted a $10,000 bond. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's all we have for you today. Apologize for having to be on the road yesterday, but I flew back today. It was amazing weather, I must say. I'm not sure if Frank will have time to put up a little bit of pictures from my field trip. One way or another, we'll get it done real soon. Anyway, thanks for watching. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.